Last week we started this series on Money Matters. We don't talk a lot about money here at church, and in fact it's the first time in 9 years of our running here at church that we have addressed it in a series. So if you're visiting with us, this is not the norm, but nonetheless it's important for us to discuss. And we chatted last week about setting up financial foundations, setting up the big picture of life when it comes to our wealth and money. And there's three foundations we looked at. The first is that our money and wealth are all God's. He's the creator of the world, therefore he owns it all. That includes our money. The second foundation of our money and wealth is that it's all a generous, gracious gift from God. He gives it to us to use and to steward, and when we die, we hand it back. The third foundation was that money and wealth is not the ultimate goal in life. It's not who has the most toys wins. The ultimate goal in life is to share in every spiritual blessing in Christ in the heavenly realms as we sit around that heavenly banquet for eternity. Now, if that's the truth, if that's the reality of that we should have about our money and wealth, why is it that most people don't live in light of these truths? Why is it that us Aussies spend $22 billion a year on gambling? Why is it that millions are starving around the world and we live in comfortable houses, drive nice cars and eat 3 meals a day? Why is it that Christians' lifestyle is often so indistinguishable from their non-Christian neighbour? Well, it's because, as this passage tells us, we love money and we love the things that it gives us the power to buy. You see, love of money and wealth is a powerful and seductive thing. It chokes and destroys the faith of a believer, and it also destroys communities. Jesus knew the destructive power of wealth and money, and so it's no surprise that he spoke on this topic more than anything else. Because the love of power and money is what will cause a believer to stumble and fall more than any other thing in the world. But the love of money is not just an issue for the Christian either. It's an issue for the whole of society. The Apostle Paul says in 1 Timothy chapter 6, the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. And it's true, isn't it? What's at the root of gangland crime in our country? Or gambling addiction? Or corruption in politics? Or careerism? Or starving populations in the world? Or the drug trade? It's a love of money, isn't it? Now, of course, money and wealth are morally neutral. Okay? There's nothing wrong with money and wealth. They can be used for good, they can be used for bad. The issue, of course, as Paul says in 1 Timothy 6, is the love of money. That's the issue, isn't it? It's the fact that our hearts are ensnared by the seductive power of what money can give us. And so money has this power to corrupt, to deceive, to destroy, to tempt, and to lure. And it's true for all of us. And if we want to be free from that, if we want to be free from the power that money has over us, then we need to understand how this happens and why this happens, and then work out how we can overcome it. And so that's what we're going to do this morning as we turn to Matthew chapter 6. You see there in the outline, three headings. Money has the power over our heart. How money has power over our heart. Why money has power over our heart. And how we can break the power of money over our heart. All right, so three things. How money has power over heart. Why money has power. And how we can break the power of money over our heart. When it comes to money, Jesus knows our attitude to money is driven by the heart. He knows that generosity, greed, materialism, it's all driven by the heart. It just depends on what your heart loves. And therefore, the way we think about money, the way we use it, the way we think about it and spend it will depend on what you love, what your heart loves. And so if you treasure earthly things, well, you'll build treasures on earth. If you treasure heavenly things, you'll build treasures on heaven, says Jesus. And where your treasure is, there your heart is also. Because what is in your heart will be evidenced by how you use your money and what treasures you build. But Jesus goes on to use this to elaborate on this point using the illustration of the eye there in verse 22. He says, "The eye is a lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, the whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" Now, with this little illustration, he's trying to tell us that the eye is the organ of perspective. It's through the eyes, like the lamp for the body. And what is allowed to be seen and observed affects, therefore, the way we live and think and act. And so if the eye is bad, it will be filled with earthly desires and therefore will only feed our hearts to desire treasures on earth. If our eye is good, it will be filled with heavenly desires, which will feed our hearts to build treasures in heaven. Now, why is this illustration here sandwiched between these two sets of verses that Jesus is talking about money? Well, what I think Jesus is trying to tell us is this love of money, this earthly desire for treasure, has the effect of blinding us to the truth about money so that we don't see the reality of how rich we are and how blessed we are. In other words, money and greed and materialism blind us to the way we see things, to reality. You know, the 1987 film Wall Street with, was it Michael Douglas, right? And played that role, Gordon Gekko. He famously said in that movie, greed is good. Now, I think most of us would find that a bit crass, right? I don't think we'd subscribe to Gordon Gekko's ideology of life, would we? We don't think that that's a right thing to do. Why do we feel uncomfortable with that? Well, because we don't think we're greedy. You see, no one thinks they're greedy. Now, as a minister, I don't think I've anyone had anyone come to me and confess, Stu, I've got an issue. I've got a sin to confess. I'm greedy. It's never happened. No one's ever come to me and says, I'm a materialist. We don't have groups like AA where people go and try and work through their materialism. No one ever stands up at a self-help group and says, hi, I'm Stuart. I'm a materialist. Because we don't think we're greedy, right? We just don't think it's... we think other people are greedy. We think about that, the friend, the work colleague, the relative, the big investment banks, the millionaire execs, they're greedy, not me though. So let me give you an example. I think of how our bad eyes blind us to the reality of money and wealth and materialism. Let's think about our lifestyle. What when we have bad eyes, when we're blinded to this reality, what we tend to do is we look at other people and we see what they're spending on house and car and clothes and hobbies and schooling and gadgets, and we think, well, they're rich, but not me. My lifestyle's okay because they're spending more than me. But of course, those people are looking at other people who are spending more on houses and cars and holidays and clothes, etc., and thinking, they're rich, but not me. And the consequence is no one thinks they're rich, do they? Well, one or two people might think they're rich. Bill Gates probably thinks he's rich. But no one else thinks they're rich. But of course, we are rich, aren't we? Let me give you some statistics to back this up. We live in one of the wealthiest eras of human history. We live in one of the wealthiest countries in the world. A Gallup survey a couple of years ago showed that the average household income around the world was $9,700. Average household income in Australia, $46,000. We're five times richer than the average global household. But of course, that covers over the reality that millions around the world, in Africa, Asia, the Pacific, in Latin America, live on $2 or less a day. That's double the amount. So we spend double that amount to buy a cup of coffee, and they live on that a day. Research by inequality organisations shows that 29% of the world holds 97% of the wealth. Okay? 30% of people, roughly, and round up, 30% of people hold 97% of the wealth. So if just say we divided the congregation up this morning to, say, these guys here, right? Steve, Heather, 30%. And I'll give them $97, and the rest of you have got three. That's what it's saying, right? Get this, it gets even more pointed. The world's wealthiest individuals total only 8% of the world's population, but own 84% of the wealth. So we're talking 8% of people. So let's say Cos and Lauren and Ben, right? 8% of the people here today, they've got $85. The rest of you got 15. And you're probably thinking, no, I'm not in that 8%. Guess how you qualify to be in that 8% of world's wealthiest people? You have $100,000 in assets or more. And most think, oh, well, I haven't got $100,000. What, do you have equity in your house? Do you have superannuation? We are in the top 8% of the world's wealthiest people. We're rich, but we don't think we are, do we? We're blind to it. And so as a result, we don't ask questions like, do I need to spend this money on this thing? Is it right for me to spend this amount of money on this house or this car or my holiday or this party or my wardrobe or my kids' schooling or my hobby or whatever it is, else it is? Because we know others who spend more. And so we don't feel the need to ask the question because we don't think it's an issue for us because we're blind, right? We don't see. And so we don't say to ourselves, oh, hang on a minute. How can I be using this money God's giving me for Him? Aren't there better ways I can be using this money for church or for mission or for my neighbour or for the poor? How can I be radically generous with this money God's given me for this short period of time? We don't ask that, do we? Because money has the power to blind us to the truth of the greed and materialism that surrounds us and that's in us. It stops us asking those hard questions about how we spend it, how we think about it. And so this power money has over our heart, it forces us not to ask, not to think, to say it's not true of me. Now, verse 24, Jesus uses another illustration to show how money has power over our heart. Have a look at verse 24. No one can serve two masters, he says. Either he'll hate one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Now, to understand the significance of what Jesus is saying here, we need to understand the concept of what a slave or a servant was in Jesus' time. In Jesus' time, if you're a slave, you are owned by that master. You couldn't serve anyone else. It's not like in today, if you're a contractor, you can work for one company a few days a week and another company a few other days a week. No, you were devoted to that one master. You were owned by them. You served them. And so Jesus is saying it's impossible to serve two masters. And he's saying that is true for us when it comes to God and money. Either God is served with a genuine heart and genuine devotion, or he's not served at all. You can't do both, he's saying. And when we attempt to divide our loyalty, what we're doing is we're not displaying a partial commitment like a contractor, 2 days here, 3 days there. Actually, what we're doing is obeying one master, and it's not Jesus. And so, friends, if you're here this morning and your trust is in Jesus, you're a Christian and you're following him, then it's in what Jesus is saying. It is impossible for you to live seeking after earthly treasure. If you're a follower of Christ, that's an impossible lifestyle for you to simply live to accumulate earthly treasure. Jesus is totally emphatic about this, isn't he? He says, no one can serve two masters. You cannot serve both God and money. There's no room for ambiguity. Now, many of us will say, we'll still try and do this. Many of us will say, try and assure ourselves that it is possible to serve both God and money. It is possible to do it simultaneously because we think we're doing a pretty good job of it ourselves, right? But in reality, what ends up happening is we serve God on Sundays and money Monday to Friday, or we serve God with our lips and money with our hearts, or we serve God in appearance and money in reality. And Jesus says, no, you can't. It's impossible. And yet many will still try. And friends, if you say, oh, I'm only doing it for my family, then you're fooling yourself. And you're justifying your heart's desires under that cloak of serving money and wealth. It can be a little bit like the monkey, you know, the illustration of monkey wants to get the peanut out of the jar. Puts his hand in the jar, he grabs a peanut, he can't get his fist out because the opening is too small. And so he's got a choice to make. It's either drop the peanut and take his hand out, or he's just got a jar permanently attached to his hand. He wants both, but he can't have both. And that's like us. We can't have both. We try and do the same like the monkey. We want riches on heaven, in heaven, and we want riches on earth. But Jesus said, no, you can't. It's impossible. And so money has power over our hearts. Now, why does money have power over our heart? Why does this happen? Jesus says in verse 21, where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. You see, money has power over us because we have treasures in the heart that we love, and money helps get it for us. You see, money serves as a window into our hearts. Your money is like the perfect way for finding out what is the treasure of your heart, what is the idol of your heart. Because you will always find it easy to spend money on the things that you love the most. You notice that? There'll be some things that I'll look up online and I'll research and I want to get the best price because it doesn't, spending money on that thing is an issue. But something I love, something I want, there's a bit of an idol. Credit card, flash it, no worries. Don't think twice. So whatever it is you crave for, how you spend your money is often an insight into that treasure of the heart, that idol of the heart. Whatever it is, it could be significance, being approved or recognized by others. It could be security. It could be having control in your life, being valued and having a sense of worth. It could be power, peace. So for instance, say the idol of your heart is significance. You like it when people appreciate you and recognize you and think you are somebody, and you feel happy and complete when they're recognizing you and your achievements and you feel important. Well, that idol of significance is going to be the thing you're happy to spend money on and the thing that stops you from giving your money away. And so if we crave significance, we can do that in any number of ways. It might be in the status of where I live. Oh, you live in Oatley. Very nice. Lugano, water views. Oh, you've got it. Mossman. What cars do our real estate agents drive? Well, driving BMWs, aren't they? It's a status thing. It's a significant. They want to be significant. They want to seem to be successful. So they tip their money into expensive cars. We can tip our money into things that make us feel significant. Like we've made it, so that we feel like we're somebody. And money gives us that ability to feel that and to have that. What if you treasure security or control? You know, if you reason, if I've got money, I can control the uncontrollable in this sort of crazy world. I can just feel secure in my life. And so if I've got money, then I feel happy. Jesus, of course, goes on to say in the rest of the passage that there's no point worrying about any of those things because it's not going to add a minute to your life because God's in control anyway. Tim Keller tells a story of a pastor who has two young women. They come to his church, they're converted, and in the course of time, they decide they want to go to the mission field. They go home, they tell mum and dad, and mum and dad say, oh, that's nice to hear. Glad you've had your little religious experience. That's good for you. But before you go, happy to do that, before you go on the mission field, finish your master's degree, get a job, start your career, and get some savings behind you, get some security. And so they're conflicted by that, and they go back to their pastor and say, look, we don't really know how to deal with the folks on this. How should we respond? He says, go and tell them that we're on a little ball of rock called Earth, spinning through space, and who knows if we're going to run into something. But even if we don't one day, under each one of us is going to open a trapdoor and everyone is going to fall off. At the end of your life, a trapdoor opens up, and if we fall off the little ball of rock into the everlasting arms of God, or into the abyss. And you think a master's degree is going to give you security. And Jesus is saying here, friends, the power of money looks like it can give us security, but it can't stop tragedy. Can't stop a terrorist running into people on London Bridge. Money can't stop breakdown in personal relationships. And it can't stop death. You see, we can't give us those things. But we crave it. And friends, if you're not being radically generous with your money, if you find it difficult to give away, if you're not being radically different to your non-believing neighbour in the way you use your money, then it's because there's some treasure that you have in your heart that's holding you back. What's that treasure for you? What's that treasure that's holding you back from being generous with the treasure God's giving you? Because the thing you treasure most is the thing that will get your money. Now, how do we break the power of money in our lives? How do we get to the place where we can be radically generous with the good things God is giving us day by day? How can we become people whose hearts are not bound up with earthly treasure? Well, have a look at what Jesus has to say in verse 19. He says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal." You see, he's saying, don't treasure earthly treasure, treasure heavenly treasure. Now, we all treasure something. And to treasure something, as we've been saying, is to love something in the heart. It's to be overcome by that, or to be over-desire it. And to say, if I had this thing, I'd be happy. If I had this thing, I'd be satisfied. If I had this thing, I'd be content. Oh, my life will be good. We've all got something that we treasure. We've all got something that we think is precious, and we've just got to have it. And whatever it is, then you feel like you've got to have it. You're constantly thinking about it, you spend your money on it, and it's the thing that you desire and love. How do you break the power of that treasure over your heart? Well, two things. Firstly, recognize that any satisfaction or joy or value that treasures give you is only going to be temporary. You see, Jesus is saying in these verses, if you store up treasures on earth, they will rust, break, get stolen, shrink, wear out, and become obsolete. Who here still has VHS cassettes lying around their house? Do you use them? No. Obsolete, aren't they? We've moved on. CDs, DVDs, Blu-ray, and the next technology. The Samsung 4 that came out a few years ago. I had one of those. Woohoo! I've got a Samsung 4. Oh, it's obsolete now. Obsolete within 12 months. The next that's been upgraded 3 times. My first car, my pride and joy, 1987 Ford Fairlane. I need $1,000 a week to put petrol in it. It was hopeless. And it was my pride and joy. It's probably sitting in some scrap heap in a wrecker's, squashed up into a 4-foot by 2-foot ball of metal. The first suit I had made. I have to get clothes made, of course, because I'm so big. Well, I got this nice suit. And then I put on weight and I can't wear it anymore. Useless, right? As friends, you see, you get to the end, we have all this stuff and it only really satisfies us for a short time. It doesn't last. Even if you get to the end of your life with your possessions and wealth intact, then what? It's useless. Now here in my pocket, I've got a wad of cash. See? Lots of money. Lots and lots of money. Of course, it's only Monopoly money. So if I go across the road to the cafe, it's useless, isn't it? I can't even buy a cup of coffee. But when I was playing Monopoly, I was rich. I could buy Park Lane. I could buy Mayfair. I put houses and hotels on there. I cleaned them up because I was rich. But then we closed the Monopoly box. The game is over. And I went back to living a normal life. And friends, one day, God's going to close the box on your life and all the things in this world that you have will all be over. And whatever you have and whatever you've earned, whatever you've prospered with or invested or accumulated will be worthless. And you'll stand before him with your property and your shares and your super and your cash, and God will say, empty your pockets. And whatever comes out will be useless. It'll be like Monopoly money. You won't even be able to buy a cup of coffee with it. So, friends, we need to see that our earthly treasure will not last. And if you want to break the power of of money or treasure over your heart, the first is to recognize all our earthly treasures, they are temporary. They are only temporary. The second way to realize that to break this power of treasure over heart is to realize you have a greater treasure in Christ. You see, every treasure that we seek for in this world causes us to empty ourselves for it. Okay, so if your desire is to have the best house in the best suburb, and you flog your guts out, and both husband and wife work hard to get it, pay off the mortgage, you empty yourself to get it. If that's the thing you treasure, whatever your treasure is, we empty ourselves for it. But Jesus, he's the one treasure who emptied himself to get you. Anything else you treasure will say, empty yourself for me. But if you make Jesus Christ your treasure, he says, I emptied myself for you. And it's only if you make Jesus your treasure, friends, only if you make him the most important thing in your life, will you actually be freed from the power that money and treasures have over your heart. Now, how can you treasure Jesus? Well, think about, what did Jesus treasure? What was his treasure? Think about what he did with his treasure. He had the ultimate treasure, didn't he? He was the Lord of heaven and earth. We just sang about that in our last song. He had the ultimate status, Son of the Father. He had the ultimate security. He had life with the Father in heaven for eternity. He had it all. And so when he came to earth, what happened to him on the cross? He gave it all up. Gave up all his possessions, gave up all his belongings, gave up all his... He gave it all up. Why? Because he had something... there was something that he didn't have. And that's us. And friends, if he didn't come into the world and go to the cross, then he would have lost us. But he gave himself up for us. And you only give yourself up for something you don't have, for something that you treasure. And what this means is Jesus Christ looked at you and me and he said, you are my treasure. And I'm willing to give up all my treasure so I can have you. And even if I have to go to hell on the cross, it'll all be worth it. And friends, you know what that means? It means that you are more valuable to him than the universe, or he wouldn't have given it up for you. It means you are his ultimate treasure. And friends, when I see him making me the ultimate treasure of his life, then I don't know about you, but it melts my heart and makes him the ultimate treasure of my life. And to the degree you and I make him the ultimate treasure, we see him making me the ultimate treasure, the one thing that he's willing to give up his life for, well then he becomes the one thing that I'm willing to give up my life for. Now friends, you know what this means? It means all these other treasures that are important to me, all these treasures that are important to you, well, they're just nice things to use and take care of until we hand it back. But the more that I see Jesus making me his ultimate treasure, well, that makes him my ultimate treasure, the treasure of my heart, instead of all those things that you and I want to chase after. My friends, unless you know that he was willing to lose all his treasures so that you could be his treasure, unless you know that he looked at you and he thought, if I can have them, it'll be worth it. It'll be totally worth it. Totally worth giving up everything. Friends, when you know that, then that will free you from all those desires in the heart that you treasure more than anything else in the world, including your money, because you'll have a greater treasure in Christ. Let's pray.